Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Another great week for It's the Real. Let's talk about some of the things that happened last week. We had Miss Info and Angie Martinez here on the podcast at the same damn time.
Two women in our apartment. Who would have thought?
Shout out to them. It was a great podcast. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it here on SoundCloud and iTunes, and also on the Full Screen app that you can go to at fullscreen.com/It's the Real.
Right. If you want to actually watch what we're talking about, you want to actually see what's happening.
It's a really great way to experience a waste of time with It's the Real. That was one good thing that happened this week. Another good thing that happened this week was that we went to dinner for Phil Chang's birthday. Shout out to Phil. We went down to JG Mellon, had some nice burgers there. But better than Angie and Miss Info and Phil, this week, 2 Chainz added us on Twitter.
Right. Why waste our time with actual friends when we can get added by someone that we've met maybe once?
It's almost incomprehensible how much this tweet meant to me. I was out with our friends, Ashley, Jason, Estelle, at this...
Yeah, but who cares about them?
We went to this bar, and the DJ who was playing there was doing a pretty good job. And he jumps on the mic. He does one of those like drops for himself. And he's like, DJ, whatever my name is.
That's a terrible DJ name.
Terrible DJ name. And he says, I'm taking requests. And you know, but the bar's pretty like empty at this point. It's sort of dinner time. I jump up out of my seat. I run over there and I say, play good music, champions. He says, no problem. No sooner than when I get to my seat, he puts on what is, and you can attest to this, the only song that I've been listening to for as long as it's been out.
Yeah.
It is... been on repeat in this apartment this entire time.
Well, from your room, yeah.
From my room.
Yeah.
And I sit down and he starts playing it and you hear Quavo. You hear Kanye. You hear Travis Scott. You hear Gucci. You hear Big Sean. And then I'm getting so excited because my favorite verse in this song, 2 Chainz, is about to play and he cuts it off. And it is so terrible that I take to Twitter and I say, fuck any DJ who cuts off Good Music's champions before at 2 Chainz verse, and I left it at that. And hours went by, and by the way, this DJ would not play any of the requests that any of our friends made, by
well,
the way.
Well, DJ whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm. Terrible DJ name.
Not really into, you know.
He's not, no. Actually, and those requests, by the way, were for like Gucci or for French.
Well, he already played Gucci, though.
Yeah, he played the Gucci verse, but he didn't play any Gucci songs. He didn't play Lockjaw, which is a great song right now. There's a lot of stuff he could have played he did not play, but he didn't play 2 Chainz verse. Anyway, the evening goes on. 3 hours later, I'm at another bar, and I get a text from Jeff on our group text chain, and what is Jeff attached there?
A screenshot.
Of?
2 Chainz adding us on Twitter, responding to your tweet.
Saying?
Nah. For real, for real.
Oh, it was so good. Listen, 2 Chainz left the screening, the premiere of Kanye's video for Famous,
mm-hmm.
the one where you have all the...
The naked,
people lying in the same bed, yep. Right? Trump.
It's a big bed.
Anna Wintour.
Yeah.
Kim Kardashian, Amber Rose, Chris yep. Brown.
Keep going.
Ray J, Bill Cosby, Kanye.
And you cut it off before the 2 Chainz.
And 2 Chainz, his... first tweet out of that thing is to us saying, nah, for real, for real.
I wonder if it made his night as much as it made your night.
I just want to tell him in person how much it means to me. This
2 Chainz, come on the podcast so Eric can tell you how much adding us on Twitter.
If you are just listening to this podcast right now, if you're 2 Chainz, if you are our friends, if you're just new to It's the Real, there's a few different ways that you can experience this podcast. Number one.
Add us on Twitter and say, nah, for real, for real.
Actually, people really should add us on Twitter and just say, nah, for real, for real. Let's make this a thing.
Yeah.
Nah, for real, for real. And by the way, it said, nah, FRFR. And a lot of people were like, fur. Like, what is that?
Who thought that? No one thought that.
Our brother Dan.
Well, Dan is...
Shout out to Dan.
Dan has a real job and doesn't have to concern himself with
internet slang. Shout out to 2 Chainz. Shout out to Dan. If you want to experience this podcast, go to fullscreen.com/itsthereal. You get the first month free. You can watch our episodes with Charlamagne, which you're going to hear today. You can watch it with Angie and Miss Info. And just yesterday, we premiered a new episode.
With Lenny S.
Woo!
The A&R for Jay-Z and Roc Nation.
And
now manager of DJ Khaled, who obviously we had to talk about.
Yeah, look, we covered a lot of ground.
There isn't one conversation, it seems like, where we don't talk about DJ Khaled.
No.
I like that, yeah.
So check out that Lenny S. episode. It's up on full screen right now. Today's episode features Charlemagne the God, and we went from his journey down in South Carolina all the way up to New York. He was digging ditches in South Carolina, and now he's...
On billboards
up here. It's a really great episode. Hope you guys enjoy it. If you want to find more of these episodes, Jeff, would you like to tell people where to go?
Yes, you can go on soundcloud.com/awasteoftime. Also, you can go to Instagram @itsthereal, @itsthereal. We're on Facebook @itsthereal. We are also on Snapchat @itsthereal and @itsthereal_Eric because it's the real.
We haven't taken care of that, have we?
We will find whoever has squatted on It's the Real, and we will write a strongly worded letter.
Listen.
I will DM It's the Real.
Tell us who you are.
Who are you? Who are you?
All right. Jeff, we should probably get into this episode right now, right?
Nah. For real.
Yo, what up, it's Eric, a.k.a. Emissions Test, a.k.a. Hood Pass.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Fidel Cashflow, a.k.a. Green Fatigue.
Yeah, Charlemagne the God, the prince of pissing people off, the ruler rubbing me the wrong way, the architect of aggravation, that's me.
Yeah, and it's a waste of time with It's the Real.
Jesus Christ. Why doesn't it smell so sweaty?
In here?
It smells like a gym.
I don't know.
Who's doing jumping jacks, yo?
Nobody.
Not me.
Oh, okay. I
can't speak for everybody here. Yeah.
Gotcha. I take a lot of naps. I don't know. I'm not that active.
Got you.
Did you do jumping jacks?
No. Well, I'm.
You didn't bring the smell with you?
No.
Okay.
I've been fasting for 3 days.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, it was Memorial Weekend last weekend, so it was a crazy weekend. A lot of drinks, a lot of fried food down south.
Right.
So I've been fasting for the past 3 days. It's my last day of fasting.
You went down to South Carolina.
You know it.
Okay.
My birthplace.
Yep.
Home.
And does everybody still live down there?
Yeah, everybody. Moms, pops.
You're the only one who moved away?
Nah. My older sister lives in Georgia. One of my younger brothers lives in Tennessee.
Okay.
But everybody else.
Did they come home for the weekend, too?
They did, actually.
And how many people were staying with your parents?
We had a beach house in Folly Beach.
Oh.
So that's like, it seats like 14 people. So it was a full house. Like my wife's in-law, my wife's parents and grandma and my mom and cousin.
Did you do any cooking?
Nephews. Hell no. My aunt does all that. My sisters and everybody. My mom, they held that down.
Not you whatsoever.
Nah, I don't cook. I mean, I can a little bit if I'm forced to, like spaghetti, regular shit like that. I can do a steak. That's about it.
Let's go back all the way to the beginning.
Okay.
You're born and raised in Columbia?
Well, I was born in Charleston, raised in a small town called Monk's Corner.
Right.
Yeah, Monk's Corner, population's like 9,000. Something like that.
And how big was your high school class?
Shit, I don't know. I finished high school in night school.
Really?
Yeah, so I have no idea.
When'd you leave?
98.
No. When did you leave here?
I left New York 2000. No, I came to New York in 2006. Yeah, because I used to do radio in Columbia, South Carolina, and the station that I was owned by Inner City Broadcasting, and Inner City used to syndicate Wendy out of WBLS in New York. She used to come on in Columbia, so she started hearing like a lot of my interviews and stuff online, and she just shouted me out one day on the radio, and I'm like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, she was just like, shout out to Charlamagne for what he said to Buffy the Body, and then, you know, when she came down to Columbia, just showed her love, her and her husband Kevin Hunter, like getting them what they need, weed, liquor, showing them around, whatever. And so we just built a relationship like that. And I didn't even know they was looking for a co-host. So she invited me to come to a party here in New York from South Carolina. So I flew up.
Had you been to New York before?
Yeah, I came to New York like right after 9/11, which was crazy because that was the first time I was ever on a plane and I was scared to death.
Yeah, sure.
Like literally it was like a month or two after 9/11.
Where had you been before that?
Florida, Jersey, because we used to drive and shit like that. But yeah, Wendy bought me up here in 2006.
Yeah. So you start off in South Carolina. You're from a family of how many kids?
Two sisters, two brothers that I grew up with. So five of us.
And where do
my father got illegitimate children? He got like two girls.
Okay.
Out there.
Shouts to him.
Yep.
Yeah. He shot to him.
And where do you fall like in the ranks?
I'm
this
oldest boy, second child, oldest boy.
Gotcha. Yeah. So did you?
Oh, second. Yeah, second oldest, basically.
And you have an older sister.
Older sister.
Yeah. And she was responsible. She was like.
Oh yeah, my sister's work
good
ethic.
In school.
Oh yeah, yeah. My sister's work ethic is crazy. Like even to this day, my sister always had like three jobs at one time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of where I got it from when I started, when I made the transition from being in the streets doing bullshit to actually trying to do responsible things. I was working at Demo in the mall. I did telemarketing at a place called Paragon Solutions. I was interning at the radio station. Like, I literally had like 3-4 gigs at once just because I used to always see her do that.
Right.
Plus, I wasn't doing anything else. So what was the point? It's 168 hours in a week, 24 hours in a day. Let me try to utilize as many as I can.
What was the telemarketing like?
Telemarketing was actually fun. I was the guy who used to call you and be like, yo, I work for BMG Music Group. I got 10 CDs here for a penny. You know what I mean? I was that guy. Only thing you got to pay for is what? Shipping and handling and some bullshit. I forgot the bullshit line they used to sell you. But
yeah.
I was the guy that would call you and be like, hey, we got that new Garth Brooks. We got that new Kenny Chesney back in black, you know?
Were you good at keeping people in line?
Yeah, I used to sell a lot of things. A lot of it was real because I would actually go through the catalog and look for what they wanted. But it's not like they had a lot of new music.
Right.
So you'd be like, yeah, I got that new, you know, Jay-Z. And they'll be like, which one? Hard Knock Life? And I'd be looking like, damn, here's no Hard Knock. I'm like, yeah. Which one? You want that? Yeah. And I'll just send them in my Lifetime Volume 1. It's just still the same volume.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just different, you know, same series of albums, just different volumes.
Right. Listen, whatever helps you sleep at night.
Hey, that's it. But I did good. I used to sell like 30 CDs a night, which is a lot.
And did you get paid off of how much you sold?
No. We used to get paid regular.
Like just hourly?
Yeah, I think it was like $9 an hour, $10 an hour, something like that.
And you're actually like sitting in a cubicle, right?
Sitting in a cubicle,
headset.
Man. Headset, lunch breaks, all that good shit.
Damn. And what was your like success rate? Like, was it like overwhelmingly positive or?
Yeah, because I mean, that's how they used to judge you. That's how they knew if you was working or not. Like, you couldn't come to your desk and just sit there.
Yeah.
Like, they would know how many calls you were on for that day, how long you were on the calls. Because you have some people who would come and sit there and try to sit on, they'd call like their friend
right.
And just sit there for the whole 5-8 hours. But you literally, they would know how many calls you had to do and all that good shit like that.
Do you ever hear from any of those people like you knew from those days who were just like, oh shit, like.
Yeah, I mean, nobody I used to work with, but I mean, mm-hmm. definitely mad people from back home.
Mm-hmm.
Only because I'm, you know, I go back home a lot and my number hasn't changed in over a decade.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's crazy because it's like I need to change it at this point now only because, you know, I'm the type of person I can't tell people no. So when you call me and ask me for something, I'm going to go above and beyond to try to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't get it done, it's simply because I forgot because I got a lot of shit going on. So it's like literally today my father called me while he was sitting by somebody who was trying to get money from me, but he didn't know that. So he hands the guy the phone, not knowing I've been kind of avoiding the guy,
right.
Not on purpose, but I saw his email. His email was asking for some money for some charity like everybody else.
And right.
I hadn't really got a chance to look into it yet. But now that the guy got me on the phone, he got me on a little bit of, you know, it's like, oh, I'm like, all right, man. So I got a nonprofit. So, hey, give him a couple of dollars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did you go to your high school reunion?
Hell no. I come from a town called Monk's Corner, South Carolina. Everybody that I went to high school with is fat as fuck, or dead, or in jail.
But you're winning so much right now. I feel like going back would just be like,
nah,
great.
For what? Like, I'm shitting on people for no reason, you know? And plus, 90% of the people that I probably went to school with probably wouldn't come to my high school reunion because they're fat as fuck and they don't want to be seen. Why would you want... You don't come out after you've gotten fat after high school. You get on Facebook, take angles of yourself. There's no need to be seen in public, okay, when you're fat as fucking washed after high school. What's the point?
To meet Charlamagne the God.
That's right.
Oh, I'm not going to be there.
It could be a meet and greet. This
is
great.
Yeah, yeah. You have a table set up.
Yeah.
Only time I ever go back to my high school is I give away, I do a backpack giveaway every summer
mm-hmm.
for the kids going back to school. And I do a turkey giveaway every November, you know, for Thanksgiving. Because, you know, I love New Jack City.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought when Nino Brown gave away the turkeys, that was the coolest shit in the world. So I always wanted to do that, minus the selling drugs
sure,
and killing
sure,
people.
Sure, sure, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
So, okay, so you grew up down there. Your first job was what?
My first job ever was actually working with my pops. My pops had a construction company
mm-hmm.
called McKelvey and Sons, and which was weird because none of the sons ever worked for him except for me for a brief period. But usually I would work for him when I was getting in trouble. So, like, I remember one time I got suspended from school for 10 days because I beat this kid up with a lock in the cafeteria.
What?
It was stupid.
Like a lock for, like your locker?
A lock from the school. Yeah, yeah. It had a master lock from the school. And so I got suspended for 10 days. And my father first made me cut my hair because I had this big ass afro. Mm-hmm. And that's when Snoop was going through his old murder was the kid shit.
Yeah, sure.
So my pops was like, "You think you Snoop Dogg? Snoop Dogg's on trial for murder. That ain't going to be you. Yada, yada, yada." So he made me fucking cut my hair.
Did you explain that you wouldn't get on trial for murder because you didn't actually kill the guy?
No, I was trying to explain to him that Snoop wasn't my inspiration. Method Man and Red Man was. And that's when he thought I was on the highest of narcotics because he had no idea who the fuck I was talking about. So he was like, "What the fuck are you talking? What is a Method? What is a Red Man?" He just knew Snoop because, you know, like my older cousins might have put him on to Snoop and they used to call me Snoop. And Snoop was super mainstream at that point. So he made me cut my hair and then he made me dig a hole in the yard.
For what?
My grave.
Oh shit.
Jesus, so that was the
thing.
So dark.
His whole thing was, "I want you to dig a hole 6 feet wide, 6 feet deep. Because that's either what you're gonna be doing for the rest of your life or that's what you're gonna be laying in." So his whole thing was, I was either gonna be jail and dead or digging ditches somewhere. So that was his thing. So that was like my first job.
Yeah. How many times did you have to dig yourself a ditch?
That one time, and then the other times it was like he started building my mom a house because we used to live in this double wide trailer. Mm-hmm. So he started building my mom a crib. So I had to like lay the dirt, like, you know, you start the foundation of the house. So I had to like lay the dirt all around the whole foundation, the foundation of the crib. Luckily, she just got like a ranch style home, so it's pretty wide, pretty long, but it ain't crazy. Mm-hmm. But I remember having to do that. So that was like my first job.
So did you consistently work for your father? Like,
not consistently. I mean, because I was in the street, you know, because like all of that was disciplinary stuff. Like, he was doing that to me for disciplinary reasons. But once I got introduced to selling crack, you know, the fuck? Why the fuck am I going to be doing hard labor?
Well,
and then when I stopped selling crack and, you know, wanted to do positive things, I just went and got jobs. Like, mm-hmm. I never let, like, my police record stop me from getting a job. Like, whenever it would say, "Have you ever been convicted of a crime?" What do I just write it down? Yeah. Have you ever been arrested? Yeah. Like, I wouldn't lie about it.
Right.
And so I would always get jobs. Like, I never put that in my mind psychologically. Like, yo, you know what? Having this on my record will stop me from being able to get legit jobs. Some people have that mentality without even seeing if they can get the job first. They just tell themselves already, it's not going to happen for me, which is whack.
Well, what did you want to do?
I just wanted to do something positive, man. Like, honestly, that's all I wanted to do. Like,
did it matter whether it was going to be in your hometown or somewhere else?
No. I just wanted to do something positive. Of course, as you're introduced to new things in life, you know, your mind starts to evolve. When you get to one level, then you start seeing other levels. And you're like, well, if I got here, then I can get there. And then once I get there, then I can get here. So, of course, my mind grew, but I never had a plan. I do know that I've always loved radio, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've always loved radio. I was the guy that was putting the cassette tapes in and recording the local DJs.
Dubbing everything,
yep. You know what I mean? Because they used to have this one segment on Z93 Jams in Charleston, and the segment was, I forgot what it was called. It was after, the countdown was called the Top 99. But when the Top 99 was over, they would always play like a bonus song.
Mm-hmm.
And it would always be something new. Mm-hmm. So I remember hearing Fugees, How Many Mics for the first time, you know, Keith Murray and Eric Sermon, Hostile. Like, I was the guy that was watching Rap City all the time, recording all the videos. So I always loved music. I always loved the radio. But, I mean, it all makes sense now why I had such a love for it. But back then, I was just a kid who loved the culture.
But Fugees and Eric Sermon and Redman and Method Man, were they playing any regional stuff down there too?
Nah, because at the time, that's a very good question, because people always ask me why. You know, my music taste is so diverse. It's because we didn't have our own music at the time.
Right.
I mean, later on, we had a lot of different artists, from the Carolina Pathfinders to Marley Marl to Mr. Taylor. Even in Columbia, you had guys like Boss G, Mr. Flip, like all of those dudes. But, you know, at the time, we didn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was listening to everything. I was listening to Wu-Tang. I was listening to Mobb Deep. I was listening to, you know, Death Row shit. I was listening to Trick Daddy in Florida. I was listening to Outkast, Goody Mob.
Right.
So my mind was open to all different forms of music. And plus, just growing up with my older sister, she was putting me on to like Kid and Play and, you know, fucking Salt and Pepper.
Yeah, all
that shit like that. So I used to love everything from the commercial to the underground shit. The harder shit. Like, I used to love everything.
When Petey Pablo gets played in, like, you know, North Carolina raises up, does South Carolina give a, like, anything about that?
Yeah, we did, because, I mean, he said South Carolina in the record, too. It was a Carolina anthem. So it was North Carolina, come on and raise up. throw your helicopter to South Carolina. And that was a big deal for me because, you know, my man DJ B-Lord, salute to DJ B-Lord. You know, DJ B-Lord is a DJ from South Carolina who was one of the guys who inspired me because I would see him in those videos. And a kid from South Carolina seeing another guy from South Carolina in videos was like, whoa. I remember seeing B-Lord on...
Okay.
I remember seeing B-Lord.
Is it a guy that you owe money to?
Nah, that's not. That's actually my dermatologist calling me.
Oh, but so, maybe you do. Yeah.
I saw B-Lord on a. It wasn't Rap City. It was like Planet Groove or something. But Tigger was hosting it, and I remember Big Tigger said to B-Lord, "Yo, you from North Carolina, right?" And he was like, "Nah, I'm from South Carolina." And I was like, "Oh shit!" That's, you know what I mean? Like that sparked something in me. Like, yo, if he can get on TV, I can get on TV.
Yeah.
So it was just little things like that. B-Lord was actually in that video a lot. The Petey Pablo video. So that was another thing that inspired me too, you know?
Did you ever go to South of the Border?
Of course. Of course. Like, first of all, I hate road trips.
Right.
You know, the reason I hate road trips because that drive from South Carolina to New York is brutal. It don't seem brutal when you're a kid.
Right.
But as you get older, and I remember having to do it myself a couple of times, that shit is brutal. But when you get to South of the Border, for me, that means... home.
Yeah.
When I'm coming back, it means home. When I'm leaving, it means fuck. I'm about to leave my safe haven. You know what I'm saying? But I love South of the Border.
Yeah. Pedro and
Big fucking Pedro statue.
All the billboards every 2 miles.
Yeah. You love it. Yeah. Like you don't want to stop until you see. I'm not stopping till South of the Border. Like, don't give a fuck what gas station there, what rest stop. I'm not stopping until we get to South of the Border.
Right. Okay. So you had to finish high school in night school.
In night school.
What exactly did you fail? Tell me it wasn't gym.
Nah, I just had, I got kicked out of Berkeley High School.
Okay.
That's the school in Monk's Corner. Got kicked out of there for just disciplinary reasons. I was wild for the night, whether it was fighting or disrupting class.
Or hitting people with locks.
Right, yeah. Hitting people with locks. Like, I was just bad. Like, I was just a bad kid. But the funny thing is, like, they used to, like, my one principal, Miss Sadie Brown, used to show me so much love because she used to always be like, this motherfucker's the smartest person here, but he just acts like this. And she used to love my mobilization skills because I could really mobilize. I was just mobilizing people for the wrong reason. Like, hey, let's go jump that guy. You know what I mean? And I was a bit of a snitch because I used to fucking, you know, sell dudes weed and then go tell on the dude for like get $250.
But then
like,
you're
bad business.
Yeah,
that's
horrible. Bad business. But like two guys, I'd be like, y'all ain't supposed to be dealing with weed. No way. I'm gonna give you the weed. Sell it to you, take your $10, then I'm going to go tell on y'all and get $250 because y'all ain't supposed to have weed, no way. So that's what I used to do. I would give
Little moral lesson.
Yeah. And it was whack of me because it was me generalizing and stereotyping people saying, okay, this guy's a square. So I'm going to give him the weed and then tell on him because he's square.
Right.
Fuck him. Like that was my mentality. And then when they started giving people money for guns, oh my God. Got a couple of those under my belt, too. So I was a stitch. So long story short, the principals used to kind of look out for me. So when I started getting into disciplinary problems and it was just mandatory that they had to expel me, I was being a badass, didn't even go to my expulsion hearing.
Right.
So my principal was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? So she told the board, like, yo, let's not expel him. Let's let him go to Stratford High School because that's where his mom teaches at. So they let me transfer to Stratford. So I went to Stratford. And just basically got caught up in the same shit. Because the thing is, even though I moved schools, I still lived in Mount's Corner, was still around the same people that I was getting in trouble with. And so that's when we got into a little situation.
But when you went to the school that your mom taught at, wasn't she around? And wasn't that some sort of like, I don't know, way for you not to get in trouble?
Yeah, I mean, I was good in school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was good in school. I mean, the only thing I used to do in Stratford a little bit was sell weed. Only because like I used to call Stratford 90210. Because like all the kids there seemed like they had big houses and lived in nice neighborhoods, so it was like totally different from just the dirt road aspect of Monk's Corner. And like my man used to sell weed, so he'd give me like an ounce, and I would just sell dime bags of weed to those goody two shoe kids, you know. But nobody, I never got caught for that. And then the only reason I got in trouble was because I did something outside of school. That's when me and my man was together, and it was a situation where a shooting ended up happening, and they came and arrested me from school the next day because the kids we shot at actually went to Stratford.
Damn.
Yeah, yeah. We was in Nate. That's because that was the thing. Like, they had bad girls in this area of Monk's Corner. It was like Goose Creek, Latson area. So me and my dudes would come from Monk's Corner and go hang out in these neighborhoods with these chicks, and it was a couple dudes just riding around who didn't like us there, kicking it with their chicks. So I was on my Ice Cube and Boys in the Hood shit, you know, shirt up like, "What's up, cuz? Yeah. You got a problem out here? There's a problem? There's a problem?" And then they drove off, and then we went to McDonald's. As we was pulling out McDonald's, they came pulling up behind us. It was the same car, but I guess they went and got their big brother. So big brother came hanging out the window like, "What's up? What's up?" And then, you know, some guns were drawn, shots were fired. Luckily, nobody got hit.
Yeah.
Nobody got killed. And we went on our way. They went on our way, their way. But when I got to school that morning, those two kids were sitting in that office like, "That's him."
Damn.
And so I went to jail for assault and battery.
Cops came into school.
Arrested me, scraped from Scrapwood High School. So that's why I ended up having to go to night school, because that was my last day at regular school.
You did not go to prom.
Definitely didn't go to prom. Well, you know, I did go to prom with my now wife. I went to prom
really?
With her. I went to two proms in my life. I went to prom with this girl I was dating from Scrapwood, and then I went to prom with my wife, because at the time, my girlfriend went to Scrapwood, and my now wife was my side chick.
And she was at a different school?
She was at Berkeley.
Oh, gotcha.
My wife's from Monk's Corner. Yeah. Absolutely.
Man. Wait, man. So you... Hold on. So you went to prom with your now wife, but she was your side chick at the time?
Yes.
Did you take two sets of pictures?
No, it's funny. We never did take prom pictures together. I don't think, which is weird. No, I know I didn't for a fact, because I had a girlfriend.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So I was like, right. I can't take no prom pictures. And it's so funny, because I remember I went to my wife's junior prom, and her senior year prom, she didn't even want me to go with her. She was like, "Nah, you was an asshole last year. You're not coming with me." I said,
"Right, you didn't take pictures."
I didn't
right.
take pictures.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You ruined like, everything. I didn't want to be there.
Right, right.
Stupid shit. She's like, "No, you're not ruining my shit."
Man,
so I'm like, "Yeah, okay, you're right." She was right.
How did your parents not know about what you were doing in the streets?
Oh no, they definitely did.
Oh okay.
Oh yeah, they definitely did. I mean, that's how I came up with the name Charlemagne. The reason I can't, Mount's Corner is small, so I used to call myself Charles or Charlie when I was hustling,
because
I didn't want people to, if I said my real name, which is Larry, that's my father's name.
Right.
Well, so if I said Larry, they'd be like, "Oh yeah, you Larry's son." And then the crackheads, even though they was buying dope,
right,
would go back and tell my pops he's selling dope, you know? So, you know, I used to call myself Charles or Charlie, so that wouldn't happen. But then when I started getting in trouble, it was like, he just knew. Like, I remember I used to have fiends calling the house. This is before...
On the landline?
On the fucking landline. It's before cell phones.
Wait, yeah, but they need to like...
And they asked for Charles?
Yeah.
Your dad's like, what?
It really used to be... My man, God bless the dead, his name is Jarrell Garnett. It used to be his father, whose name was Ricky Burch, God bless the dead. So Ricky used to be in the trap 24/7. So if nobody was there, he would call one of us. So if Jarrell wasn't there... my other man wasn't there, he called me. And so, like, I remember late at night, he called, and my father picked up the phone. I remember my father telling me, "If you can't handle business no better than that, you gotta get the fuck out of my house." So I just was like, "I'm not doing anything. He's just calling. What the fuck would he be calling you 2 o'clock? You think I'm stupid?" So it was that kind of thing. I remember dudes I owed money to coming to my house, and my pop standing in the doorway with the gun, because he knew what it was.
Yeah.
Like, and then when I would come in the house trying to play dumb, like, "Oh, no, they ain't talking about nothing. We just talking about some rapping shit. At fucking 7 o'clock in the morning, you think I'm fucking stupid? I know what the motherfuckers is here for." So it was just that kind of thing. But, you know, my father was a dad. Like, my pops raised me. My pops kept a foot in my ass. Like, you know, my pops' favorite thing to say was, "You're going to end up in jail, dead, or broke sitting under the fucking tree somewhere." Because, you know, in Monk's Corner, you got a lot of trees.
Right.
So guys will literally just get a bucket, a bench, and just sit under the tree, drink beer and liquor all day and do nothing. So yeah, in order to change my life, I got to change my lifestyle. So it's just like, that's what I did. Like, I just knew I had to do something, because I was not going to be that.
Yeah.
Right.
So first stop is where?
First stop, I mean, I started doing radio in South Carolina.
Right.
Yeah,
and that was in Charleston.
Yeah, right. I started off as an intern at Z93 Jams in Charleston, South Carolina. Started there in 98. I stayed there till like, I think I was an intern for like a year.
Then is that doing like street team stuff?
Team shit. Driving around, helping them put their tents
up,
setting
posters
up, getting them pizza, getting them drinks. I had one foot still in the traps. What you need? Cocaine? You need some weed? I got you on that too. Like, it's all good.
They teach you the boards or anything?
I didn't learn the boards until my man Ron White. Ron White don't get enough credit from me. I'm going to give him a lot of credit in my book. But Ron White is the first person that came to me and said, "Do you want to be on the radio?" Because I used to be the intern that used to always be at the station. So this dude named Willie Will used to always bring me on his show. So I would talk on his show. And Ron just said to me one Saturday at an event, like, yo, you want to be on the radio? We're looking for some part-timers. And I'm like, yeah. He was like, come to the station Sunday. So I came to the station Sunday, and I voice tracked. And when I voice tracked, Tessa Spencer, who was a big radio personality down there, she called me and just told me how good I sounded. And a lot of them was telling me how good I sounded. So that just put a battery in my back to like, oh, I must be pretty decent at this.
Right.
So that's what, you know, sparked the radio bug. And so I was there for some years, for like a couple years. And then I left to go to Hot 98.9 in Charleston, which was a rival station that popped up.
How was that?
It was great because they offered me my own gig, 7 to midnight, Monday through Friday. And my man George Cook, who's now the operations manager at K104 in Dallas, I remember him saying to me, I want you to have a morning show at night. So when you look back on your life, you start to see all of these different seeds that were planted at various times.
Totally.
That kind of led to your future, you know. And I mean, he was saying, I want you to have a morning show at night. So my shows have always had that structure, like as far as segments, mm-hmm. taking phone calls and really talking to the people, like just like having that conversation with the people was groomed since back then. And then I got fired from there. That was my first radio fire.
What'd you get fired for?
At the time, I thought it was because I had told somebody to suck my big black dick on the radio, which I never said. But the program director at the time, his name was Corey Hill, because they got rid of George Cook and brought in Corey Hill. Corey Hill just wanted to bring in his own people. Mm. And that's usually how it is when a new program director comes in.
So they just said that you said, suck my big
black
dick? Yeah,
I actually got fired on my day off, like Craig and Friday. Like, I was literally in Miami.
Right.
From like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, came back that Monday. He called me and goes, yo, I don't want you to come on air till me and you have a conversation. I'm like, all right, so what am I suspended? He was like, nah, I just want you to come on air till we have a conversation, which made no sense. So then 2 days later, the general manager calls me and goes, yo, you haven't been coming to work. I said, because Corey told me not to come in until we talk. He goes, why didn't you call me? I said, I don't know. I'm listening to the program director. So then I'm sitting down with Cliff and he's like, yeah, you know, Corey said that you told somebody to suck your big black dick on the radio. I'm like, what? Like, I say a lot of wild shit,
right?
But give me some credit. I'm a little more witty than that. Like, I'm not just going to just jump to suck my big black dick.
I mean, it's a hilarious line.
I mean, yeah, but why would I do that in that moment?
No.
And so I got fired from there. That was my first firing.
That's
crazy. Yeah, and then I sat out of radio for like a year. But I started doing A&R work for this label called Never So Deep Records. And
where's that based out of?
I was out of South Carolina too, but the guys were actually from Rochdale, Queens.
Really?
Yeah, and they ended up getting a label deal through MCA, and they put out an artist from Charleston named Infinity the Ghetto Child, and I was A&R of that project. But you know, I put out
an amazing name, by the way.
Yeah,
Infinity the Ghetto Child.
Yeah,
it's on iTunes.
Like 90s.
It's called Pain the Album. Salute to my guy DJ Bless. It's actually a good album. I'm on the intro, which is funny. But yeah, so I put out an album myself, but the album was more like Air Check.
Yeah. Mm.
So it was all the artists on Never So Deep with me doing like radio shit in between. So like breaks, I interviewed my man DJ Bless, who was the CEO of the label, things like that. And that got into the hands of this dude named Mike Love in Columbia, who was the program director. So he hired me to be on the Big DM, 101.3. I don't remember the numbers now, but I went to Big DM, and that started the whole Wendy thing because they were owned by Inner City. And then Big DM flipped formats to Urban Adult Contemporary.
What were they before?
They were Urban Adult Contemporary, then they moved to hip-hop, then they went back to Urban Adult Contemporary. And so they bought Hot 103.9, which is the competition in the market, and they kept that hip-hop, moved me over there. And then that's when the whole, you know, that's when I really started to develop. And that's when Wendy started to hear about me and things of that nature. So Charleston, Columbia, went with Wendy in 06, got fired from Wendy in 08. Just for economic reasons, because that was when the economy was in the toilet.
Right.
They fired like 40 people that day.
Where'd you move up here?
Well, that was the thing. Wendy couldn't pay me. Wendy and her husband Kev was like, yo, we can't pay you, but we'll give you a place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So they had me living in this condo in Fort Lee, which was dope.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people wouldn't have taken that opportunity because, you know, these fucking millennials got this mindset of
entitlement.
I got to get a check. I got to get a check. I got to get a check. I'm like, yo, how many motherfuckers can recognize opportunity when it's not a paycheck attached to it? And that's what I did. And if I hadn't have took that opportunity, I would probably not be in this position today.
No kidding.
Because who goes from market number 98, market number 93, to market number fucking one?
Yeah.
So I came up here working illegally, not under no union, not getting paid, none of that shit. But I recognized that opportunity. And I remember, it's so funny, man. I remember seeing Star from Star and Buck Wild on the front page of the Daily News when he got arrested for telling Envy's daughter, I want to fucking take a bite out your ass. Right, stupid shit.
Suck his big black dick.
Something to that effect. So I remember hearing that. I remember seeing that and saying, yo, if I do what I'm supposed to do here, I can one day do that show.
That's crazy.
And not just saying I can do mornings in New York. Right. I can do mornings on Power 105, which nobody was thinking about in 2006,
right,
by the way.
Right.
2006, it was all about Hot 97.
Totally.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking Power 105. That's where my mind was at. I told Angela Yee in 2009, when I wasn't even in radio, I wasn't even employed. Me, her, and Little Duval shot a pilot for BET that Terrence J was executive producing, and it was like a hip hop first take. And Angela was like the carry champion role. Me and Duval was like the Skip Stephen A.
Yep.
And I told Angela, who was eating hamburgers, I said, "Yo, one day me and you are gonna do mornings at Power 105 in New York." Angela looks at me and goes, "They got Ed Lover. They'll never get rid of Ed Lover." I said, "Yo, one day me and you are going to do mornings at Power 105 New York." She goes, "You're not even on the radio right fucking now." And she goes, "And I do satellite. I've never done terrestrial radio." I said, "Yeah, I don't know how it's going to happen, but one day me and you are going to do mornings at Power 105 in New York."
So you're living in Fort Lee.
Yep.
Do you have a car? Or how do you get to? You're taking the public transportation.
New Jersey Transit,
whatever it is.
Port Authority bus station. I used to take the bus to Port Authority every morning. If I didn't take the bus to Port Authority, I'd catch a ride with, you know, Wendy's husband, Kev. But Port Authority, drop me off at Port Authority, walk all the way to 34th and Park Avenue.
That's 5 days a week. Afternoons?
Afternoons, 2 to 6.
Yep.
5 days a week. So, you know, I had to learn that. And then you got to think, I would get off from Wendy. Wendy's show ended at 7. So I have to go back to Port Authority. That's when Port Authority's real scummy.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Port Authority's usually so nice.
Yeah.
It is really scummy at 7 o'clock at night. You know, sometimes if I wanted to stay in the city, go to like an event or something, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, it's like me and the homeless bums and we just all waiting.
Right.
I'm getting on the bus. They're just waiting for a dollar to buy a fucking water or something.
And what are you telling your family down south, like, that you're up to? Like, do they understand what Wendy is at that time?
Yeah, they understood it. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't really telling them anything. I mean, I think they just understood that I was just out here doing something. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Was it hard to leave?
Nah, it wasn't. It was, but it wasn't. Like, it was just one of those things I know I have to do. Like, it's one of those things where I know this is a temporary pain for what I would consider a permanent solution, permanent pleasure. Like I'm reaping all the benefits of those sacrifices now.
Right.
You know, like when I can go back down to South Carolina this weekend, rent a big beach house for all my family to be in. Like literally all my family.
Right,
we're in there kicking it, having a good time. All on me.
That's amazing.
I love that. So it's like, I'm reaping the benefits of that now. But at the time it wasn't hard because I just knew I had a plan. Like, and like, I'm the type of person, you're not gonna get in the way of my plan. And I'm not gonna let anybody else get in the way of my plan. Like, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
I care about you. But I'll be back.
Right.
You just got to trust that I'll be back. That's what I told my girl. And, like, we married now.
So yeah.
We good.
Did you tell her that when she was the side chick?
Like, no.
Trust in the plan.
I'll be back.
I don't even not going to take prom pictures, but trust in the
That's
plan.
That's why I laugh at dudes who have side chicks now and be acting like they don't give a fuck about their side chick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're constantly spending time with a person and constantly having sex with that person, you're transferring energy, you're gonna grow some type of bond with this individual. Like, you're gonna have a connection with this individual, and it's like, that's just what happened with me and her over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just stupid. That's why you should never show pictures of some girl you smashing. If you get pictures of her naked, don't go showing it off to your boy. Okay? Because you never fucking know. You show them off when you know completely that this ain't gonna be the woman that you may have to spend the rest of your life with. I see a lot of dudes doing that now. They're just showing off pictures of girls, like, "Oh, you see this chick I'm just fucking." Yeah, but you spend a lot of time with that chick you just fucking. That's gonna end up being your girl, and you're gonna be mad that I seen a pussy. You're gonna be very upset.
So, okay, so Wendy ends in 08.
Wendy ends in 08.
Then you spent the next year at a radio?
It was like 7-8 months. And then I got a call from 100.3 The Beat in Philly. That station don't even exist no more, but I got a call from this guy named Johnny at 100.3 The Beat in Philly. And they said they wanted me to do mornings. And I was like,
that was the first time you were going to do mornings?
First time I ever did mornings.
And morning hours are
mornings at night.
No, so, right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Morning hours are what?
6 a.m. to 10 a.m.
And you got
to
get in there like earlier than 6, right?
I mean, for me at the time, I was living in Lyndhurst, New Jersey. So when I got the job, you know, I couldn't even afford to move to Philly yet because I had too much pride to go get that unemployment check.
Because
I'm like, I got to go collect unemployment in New York.
Right.
Motherfuckers know me from Wendy. Right. I, you know, as soon as I got to Wendy, I started off on a VH1 show. Like, it was a lot of little shit. I'm like, I'm not doing that shit. I had too much pride. And I just had a daughter. My daughter was born June of 2008. So it was just like, I just stayed at home. It was the stay-at-home pops while my, you know, wife went to work and got the bread. And
so how far is Lyndhurst from Philly?
Shit. That's Lyndhurst. That's by Giant Stadium.
Oh.
Wait, so that's the Meadowlands.
An hour and a half away?
Yeah. So I used to wake up. And it's funny, me and my me and one of my producers now, her name is Sasha. Sasha started with me at WBLS in New York. And I just always thought she was dope. I always thought she was sharp. You know what I'm saying? And so when I got the job in Philly and I needed to hire a producer, I went and hired Sasha. And so me and Sasha would drive every morning. Sasha lived in like Elizabeth or Linden somewhere. So I can't remember the exact place there, but I would go pick her up and then we would just drive to Philly back and forth every fucking day. And now Sasha's my producer, one of my producers at the Breakfast Club.
Man.
Cause I'm the type of person, I don't forget that kind of loyalty. I don't forget that kind of belief in me.
Right.
She was working at BLS. She was good. She had an apartment right here in Jersey. For her to say in her mind, you know what? Yo, I'm gonna leave WBLS to go work in Philly, drive back and forth with this guy every day. That said something about what she saw in me.
Right.
So it's like, yo, when I got that opportunity to get back in New York and had the opportunity to hire another producer, I had to say, yo, Sasha, let's rock. Let's rock and roll. You know?
Does it matter the market, or are you just doing you and that's going to work wherever?
That's it. Just doing me. Didn't matter. Like, I remember they would tell me shit like, okay, you got to root for the Eagles. I'm like, fuck no, I'm a Cowboys fan. The fuck I look like rooting for the Eagles?
Yeah, how did you become a Cowboys fan in South Carolina?
Because, like, my father is a Cowboys fan.
Gotcha.
And the Panthers are new. Like, people don't remember. The Panthers are a fucking expansion team.
Right, right.
No, but I thought you would have been, like, a Falcons fan or something.
Nah, it was the Cowboys.
It's a big Cowboys fan, or you dig a ditch and get in it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You know what's so funny? My mother bought me a Mark Rippon sweatshirt one time. Mark Rippon.
Redskins.
Number 11.
11, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Had it on. My pops walked in the fucking house and flipped the fuck out. Like, I thought I did something. Like, he took the shit off me, started screaming at my mom, took the fucking shirt in the yard, burnt it. Like, it was that fucking serious. You know what I'm saying?
Did you go to any Eagles games while you were out there? Like, when the Cowboys came into town?
Yeah, when they played the Cowboys. And that was like, back to that, they would tell me that I had to be an Eagles fan. I'm like, no, I'm a Cowboys fan. So I actually had a promo that said, Charlamagne the God, he's crazy enough to yell, go Cowboys, in a room full of Eagles fans. Like, shit like that.
Right.
So it's like, yo, I'm the type of person, I got to live my truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You live your truth, nobody can use your truth against you. I don't know how to pretend. I don't know how to be nothing but me. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm not going to go in here and play these motherfucking games. And it worked. I ended up being like the number two or number three morning show in Philadelphia, which was big.
Like, who across all genres.
Across all genres.
Yeah, who was number one?
I'm pretty sure it was Elvis Duran at whatever the pop station was.
Oh, they syndicated
Philly.
That.
Yeah.
From Z100. Yeah.
I mean, Elvis is on like 70, 80 markets across the country.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure it was Elvis at whatever station he was at in Philly. But I was number two, and I was actually beating the other station in the market, which is Power 99, which is the Heritage station.
Right.
And so I ended up getting fired because I had some good moments in Philly. I had the Cassie moment, you know, when Cassie and Red Cafe came.
Yep.
I just told Cassie, this is a Rihanna, Beyonce world. It'll never work for you. Those things of that nature. And then Beanie Siegel interview.
Yeah, right. Which was the last thing.
Which was the last thing. And I remember, it was funny, because I remember Kevin, Wendy's husband, saying, you're only as good as your last show. And that was a hell of a show. You know? Because this is, you gotta think, this is 2009, before the whole, oh, shit goes viral.
Right.
Craze.
Yeah.
But that was like the beginnings of Twitter.
Yeah, I feel like you were a trending topic that day.
I was.
Yeah.
Was that your
first time trending?
That was my first time trending. When I got fired, it was my first time trending. Which was interesting, because I think about it now, I remember that was like the beginning of social media. I remember three moments. Little Mama, when she crashed the stage with Jay-Z.
Right.
Hell of a moment.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing Wale for the first time and tweeting, who the fuck is this clown with the Mickey Mouse shit on performing? And me and him getting into a Twitter situation, and then me giving him Donkey the Day in Philly the next day. And then the Beanie Siegel thing happened, and it just ended up on all these different websites, and Jay-Z was at some press conference, and they asked him about it, and I'm like, oh, shit. So that was like the first viral moments I remember. And then me tweeting out that I got fired, and then it trending, and then the next story was Jay-Z got Charlamagne fired. So that was like one of those the moments we're used to now,
right,
was
right.
like one of the first. That was a first for me back then.
Do you remember that's when we first connected on Twitter? That's when you first followed us, and so I mean, it's a huge moment, I'm sure, for you.
Yeah, I don't remember when I first followed y'all.
That was right then. Oh, it was like literally that day.
I do remember watching y'all a lot, though. I was just like, yo, these motherfuckers is funny as shit.
Oh, thank you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, funny and smart, though.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, we try to do that.
Yeah. So, when was the first time that your face was on a billboard? Was that in Philly?
Nah, that was definitely Breakfast Club. First time my face was on a billboard was definitely Breakfast Club. I remember that day. It was me, Envy, Angela Yee, my man Cadillac Jack, who along with G-Spin are responsible for creating the Breakfast Club and putting us on. We had a billboard on, I think it's 34th Street, right before you go into the Lincoln Tunnel.
Yeah.
West Side.
Nah, was it? Yeah, right when you get off the West Side. So I got on one of those Dolly shit and I actually went up with the billboard. So we got all that on video. But that was like, that was dope for me. I was like, wow. Because those are the type of things you dream of. Like, I remember doing overnights at Z93 Jams in Charleston, South Carolina, and being online and listening to fucking Star going on Tigger.
Yeah.
Or listening to old Petey Green. Or listening to fucking Tom joining Doug Banks, Wendy Williams, and saying to myself, yo, if I'm going to do radio, I need to do it on that level. You know what I'm saying? Like, hearing, you know, Angie Martinez and the thing she was doing in New York. I'm like, yo, I want to be on that level. I want to be a super jock if I'm going to do it. I don't want to be just some dude in a town doing the time and temperature. Like, I want my face on billboards and things of that nature.
You're not going to be that fat guy going to your high school reunion.
No way. I always, you know what's so fat? I'm so funny. What's so fat is old radio personalities. Right. Remember back in the day when every radio personality was fat as fuck?
Right.
Because we were the original catfish. Mm-hmm. Like, you would just hear our voice.
You have a face for radio, that whole thing.
That's it. Never see our looks. And then you'd meet this guy and he'd be some fat dude. And I remember saying to myself, all right, that's not going to be me. This generation is not that. I'm not going to be of that generation.
Yeah, well, and you're very lucky because this is that generation where you film everything.
Yes.
And that's what's been really, like, that was, I think, the first sort of difference between you and any other radio show is that you guys put your interviews out on video in full.
Yeah.
And they just went.
And that was a strategic plan as well. Because, I mean, if you paid attention to any of us before the Breakfast Club, Angela Yee would always do that on Shade 45.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She'd always put out her videos online, interviews. Envy would do it from Hip Hop Nation. He'd always put out his interviews. And I would always put out my audio. Because, you know, I learned the camera crew in Philly. But before it was just audio. Like Cassie and Red Cafe was just audio. But then I started using the camera crews and filming it. Because I realized that these websites are picking it up for content. So when we all came together, I remember us saying, like, yo, this is what we got to do. We need to make them hire us a cameraman that can come in here and record all our interviews. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they did. Salute to my guy, Jamie. He's been with us the whole 6 years. Mm-hmm. And the first thing we did was a viral video. Me, Angela, and Envy did a video basically saying whose show would it be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we put that out.
I remember that, yeah.
And that shit did like 600,000. I don't know where it's at now, but at the time, in like a week or two, that shit did like 600,000 views. And I'm like, holy shit. Because it was a big thing when they announced that we all were doing the show together.
Like, I feel like that was definitely like a concern of mine. I was like, these are three big personalities. I mean, Envy's probably the smallest of the personalities, but like, or maybe, and I don't know, you're the biggest personality. So like, the question was, how would you three fit together?
Yeah, I mean, I think it works because all of us were sidekicks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Envy was a sidekick to Ms. Jones. Angela was a sidekick to Cypher Sounds. I was a sidekick to Wendy Williams. So I think we all understand how to play our positions. And roles are very important. Like, there's no lead on the Breakfast Club. Like, Envy's the anchor.
Mm-hmm.
He handles the business, the transitions.
He says good
like
morning.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, but we all can be shooters when we need to be. But that's what I'm a shooter.
And did you guys have, like, sessions before you actually signed on to see how you tested
two shows? We did a Friday show,
mm-hmm.
and we did a Saturday show, and then Monday we hit the ground running with the real show. And I mean, you know, from the beginning we was utilizing the iHeartRadio app, and honestly the internet saved us because they wanted to fire us like a year in.
Really?
Yeah, they wanted to fire us like a year in only because it wasn't translating in ratings, and we live in a PPM world.
Yeah.
And I remember them asking us questions. I remember Cadillac Jack said to me, so if we put this show together, what do you think y'all going to do in the ratings? I said, number one, immediately, instant impact. Like, I really thought that in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Stupid ass me. But it wasn't instant impact, you know? And I remember, you know, I remember one day, it was one month, it was like, ho, y'all number four. Like, you know, because before it was like 14, 15. It's like, oh, you're number four. Like,
right.
And then I remember it was the fucking Ray J interview.
Oh, right? Yeah. Oh.
And fucking Ray J called wildin', drunk or high. Thank God for whatever addictions Ray J had at
going
the time.
Going at Fab?
Yes, yeah, going at yeah, Fab. Yeah, yeah. And that shit just went crazy. Yeah. Wow. And mind you, Ray J was our first Breakfast Club interview ever.
Really?
Ever. Ray J was the first Breakfast Club interview ever. Ray J hit it first.
But who had the relationship with him?
Me. Oh, okay. Well, I think all of us did, but I mean, yeah, all of us actually had did, but I mean, I knew Ray J since South Carolina. I used to take Ray J to Wax House to get weed. It's Columbia, South Carolina. Like, Ray J would come down, like, yo, I need
but
some
you
weed.
Guys didn't, like, think to get, like, a bigger name for, like, your first show? No, I mean, like,
we had to get what we could get.
No, yeah, of course, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that was just, that wasn't even our first show. That was just, like, maybe a week or two after us being on. Ray J came to do his interview with the Breakfast Club. And I remember that interview went so viral. So whenever they was thinking about firing us, I remember Doc Winters saying, Doc Winters and Dennis Clark told them, hold up. Because everywhere I go, I'm hearing about this show.
Right.
Just hold up, give it a minute. And that's what they did. Thank God. And we're here.
Thank God for Ray J.
Almost 6 years later. Thank God for Ray J. Word up. Thank God for Ray J. Thank God for the internet.
Right.
Because you got to think, they wasn't giving us any promotion at the time. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like it was a big marketing campaign. It was just all viral. Press release went out. All these different hip-hop sites pick it up like, oh, shit. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, we did the video. Whose show is it? That shit went viral.
Yeah.
So it's like, it was just all about the internet, putting our interviews out and people posting them, retweeting them, talking about them. So the internet created that chatter that made people start really focusing on the Breakfast
Club.
Well,
did that teach you anything in terms of, like, where you wanted to go in terms of your interviews afterwards? Where you're like, yo, the video is, like, that important and the moments are...
Nah, for me, it was it's always about, you know, doing solid radio. Like, I always say, man, I never want to become a caricature myself. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, a lot of times you'll see that. I get so many tweets, oh, Charlamagne, you getting soft. Or, Charlamagne, why didn't you talk to this person the way you talked to Lil Mama? You really want me to talk to Minister Farrakhan the way I talked to Lil Mama?
Right, right.
You really want me to talk to Jay-Z the way I talked to Lil Mama? What reason would I have to do that? So it's just like, for me, if I'm a fan, I'm not afraid to show you that I'm a fan. If I don't like your shit, I'm not afraid to tell you that either. You know, and that don't mean I'm not a fan. Like, I love Kanye, but I just did not like Yeezus.
Right.
What's wrong with saying that?
Nothing. Nothing.
So it's like, for me, it's like I never want to get caught up in trying to create moments. Like, because you can't create them.
Right.
When you try to force anything, when you reach, you will lose. Like, you can't create a Birdman moment.
I mean.
Like, that's not happened. Like, that just happened because of previous things I said about Birdman, whether it was why would somebody sign to Birdman when he has a history of not paying artists, or why would he not pay Wayne when he has Wayne's face tattooed on his chest and he kissed him in his mouth and we all saw it. Like, y'all have a different type of relationship.
Right.
Like, you can't not pay Wayne. So it's like, just years of him hearing that had him come in there and flip out.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fucking force that. You can't. That's not a reach. That's not something you go for. It either happens or it doesn't.
And did you, so that morning when Birdman walked in, did you have a feeling that something would happen?
Absolutely. I mean, because they called me at 4 in the morning.
that morning?
Cash Money, not that morning. Oh. It was like a couple weeks prior. Malcolm from Cash Money called me. But everybody knows I'm up at 4, so that's not a reach.
Yeah.
So he was like, yeah, Birdman wants to come on the show. I'm like, all right, cool. But in my mind, I'm like, he coming to get a moment. Because this was after K. Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
So when K. Michelle did that to Ye,
right.
I'm like, people probably looking like, okay, we can come in here and do that to the Breakfast Club. Or even with Fredro, whoever it is.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like, okay, he wants a moment. So I'm sitting there watching him as he's outside the glass and Lose Yourself by Eminem is playing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pacing back and forth. And then he came in there and lost his motherfucking self. But it worked out for everybody.
Yeah.
He got a single, Respect.
Yeah.
He got t-shirts. I'm sure he's made $500,000 in merchandise by now.
Do you guys play Respect on the morning show?
Nah. We play his drops, though. Like, you know.
Sure.
The end of the show is DMX saying, Breakfast Club, bitches.
Yeah.
And then Baby saying, you finished or y'all done? When the show's over. Like, we play his drops. Like, you know, the Hamiltones did a great jingle to it.
Yep, totally.
Which led to them coming to the Breakfast Club. And then they just did a bunch of great jingles for us. So I feel like that moment worked for everybody. We call those moments Thanksgiving turkeys. Because those are the moments you eat off for a while.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you eat that turkey for dinner on Thanksgiving. And then the next couple weeks, you're making sandwiches.
And Birdman is always welcome to the Breakfast Club.
Nah.
Okay.
Nah. I mean, I'm not going to say he's not always welcome. It's just I don't know what we would talk about at this point.
Right.
Like you had the chance to come in and have the conversation. Like, anything I had said prior, I would have said, directly to you.
Right.
That's why I kept asking him, what's up? Like, what, you know, what you here for? Like, what's the issue?
Right.
You know, I don't have no issue. Like, well, what, you know, you got to have, what's wrong? You mad because I said that, you know, you broke up with Wayne, now you dating Young Thug? Like, what is it? Like, I need to know. Which one is it?
Right.
You know? So he didn't get it off his chest. And I didn't know him before that. I don't need to know him after this. Like,
there you go.
Right. You guys aren't going to, like, you know.
I don't dislike him.
No, but
I don't,
like,
I don't feel any way about it. It's just, no, what's the point? We had a chance to have a conversation. What would we talk about now?
Are you friends with any artists?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I would always say.
Infinity, the.
Yeah, Ghetto Child. Yeah. I would always say, I'm not of the industry. I'm of the people. Because I feel like when you're too involved in the industry, you won't give your real opinions about the industry.
Right.
You know, but when you're of the people, you're keeping your ear to the street. Like my man Gary Vaynerchuk likes to say, the clouds in the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like when you're in the industry, you're too much in the clouds. I like to play near the dirt because that's when you just stay focused. You keep your ear on what's hot in the street, you know, how people are feeling, getting a real gauge of things, not an industry gauge, because the industry gauge is some, just some dick sucking shit. You know what I mean? Somebody will tell you, my God, this new fucking Kanye Yeezus is the shit. It's so hot. Which it may be to them, but 9 times out of 10, they really don't feel that way. They just feel that way because they have an industry relationship with the person. So I never did, but it's just impossible not to, the more you grow in the business. Right. Like, I have genuine people who I came up with before they were popping. Like Killer Mike used to be in South Carolina together. You know what I'm saying? I knew 2 Chainz when he was Titty Boy in Club LaRoyce in South Carolina. Wale's my guy, you know what I mean? Even we started beefing with a beef on Twitter when you first came out, but that's my guy. I mean, Lala's family to me, you know? Tyrese is a good friend of mine, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like Timbaland, like you just, it happens. But these are natural, organic relationships.
Right.
And these are also people who aren't afraid of me having an unbiased opinion towards them. These are people who will call me and be like, what you think of this? Because they know I'm going to keep it 100 with them. What you think of this idea? Stuff like that. So anybody who can handle me still being me, because I'm going to still be me, regardless of whether we're friends or not, we can be cool.
I feel like
Swiss,
a lot of
Swiss is somebody I consider a friend. I made my first real money with Swiss Beats.
Really?
Yeah, the first time I ever seen $100,000 check, even though I didn't get to keep the whole 100. You know, it was because of Swiss. Because I had an artist I was working with. His name was Little Rue from Columbia, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, me and Little Rue had went into a business deal where it was like my company, Stupid Dope Moves, his company, Presidential. And we were supposed to sign with Asylum Shotta, suit to my man Jay Grant.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was Swiss, prior to all of this, I put out a compilation album called South Crack the Album. So it was just artists from Columbia and Charleston. And I gave it to Swiss one day at Mano's High Hater video shoot.
Yep.
Because Swiss just came up to me on some G shit, like, y'all fuck with you, you funny as hell on Wendy's show, whatever, whatever. And I remember Swiss emailed me, he was like, yo, any of these guys that you think, you know, can really do something, let me know.
Hmm.
And I'll do a record with them and take you wherever you want to go.
Wow.
This is this is the illest thing to me, because I say guys like Swiss Beats, this is why they're blessed. This motherfucker didn't know me from a can of paint. He didn't have to do that. It was just I don't know why he did it to this day, but if you know Swiss, that's just the type of person he is.
Right.
And so I hit my man DJ Frosty, like, Frost, who should we send to Swiss? I told him what happened. He was like, yo, send Lil Rue. Lil Rue got this record down here called Nasty Song that's popping. So I sent him the record. And Swiss was like, yo, I fuck with this. I like his tone.
Hmm.
Now, mind you, Lil Rue had a lot of a Young One vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
Swiss had signed Young One, so Swiss kind of got it. Plus, Swiss grew up in Atlanta.
Mm.
So then I sent him another Rue song, and he liked that too. He was like, yo, fly him up. So I hit Lil Rue. Lil Rue flew up. Long story short, Lil Rue ended up doing 4 songs with Swiss. Swiss even did a record with him, and Swiss was on the hook.
Crazy.
And then Swiss was like, what label y'all want to go to? I said, y'all want to go to Asylum. Because I feel like at the time, Asylum was living.
Right. They run in the South.
They were running the South.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at what they did with Houston and Gucci Mane and Waka
Flocka. Totally, yeah.
Boosie, I'm like, yo, that's where we need to be. Like, right there. So we was going to do the deal. But then Lil Rue had this shady-ass manager named Jonathan Stevens. And Jonathan, you know, wanted to take him to Def Jam. Because they country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm country, too. But right, they... Def Jam got Jay-Z, Rick Ross, and Rihanna, and all of these big names. And I'm like, go look at fucking Def Jam's website. You're going to see 100 artists.
Yeah.
It's only 20 of them that's popping. Rue going to fall into that other 80. And Jay Grant told him the same thing. Jay Grant was like, yo, you can't be T.I. on Def Jam, but you can be T.I. on Asylum. Like, you can be that big, especially with this record. So they ended up wanting to do the deal with Def Jam, so my lawyer did the deal, and we got a $150,000 check for it. And Lil Rue got 80, and then we had to spend 40 to a label, because Lil Rue was a contract host. We had to spend 40 to a label in Atlanta that he had signed the contract with. And then me, Wendy's husband Kevin, my man DJ Frosby split the other 40. But all of that happened because of Swiss.
Where is Lil Rue today?
I have no idea. Not doing nothing, probably. I know he's in South Carolina somewhere, but he's not popping.
Yeah.
And that's one of my I'm not gonna front. That's one thing that I don't live with regret, but that's one of the things I'm very disappointed didn't happen, because I had a whole plan for how I wanted to structure the South Carolina hip hop music scene, and I knew Asylum could make that happen for me. Because I mean, look what they did with Boosie and Webby and
Waka
and Gucci and OJ the Juice Man and Paul Wall and, you know, Mike Jones. Like, it would have been amazing, but it didn't happen.
Damn.
Does that make you not want to work with other artists?
Yeah, it did a little bit. Still does. You know what I mean? It has to be very special. Last person I remember from South Carolina who could have been really, really special was my man Speaker Knockers. God bless the dead. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's so funny. Speaker Knockers tweeted me one day and goes, "I wonder if Charlamagne knows what's going on in his own state." And I get that all the time. So I was just like, I hit him back. I was like, "Yo, if you was really hot, I would hear about it from somebody other than you." Man, my timeline, you would thought Justin Bieber tweeted me. Like, my whole timeline was like, "Fuck you mean, you mad or nah? Speaker Knockers is the shit, blase blase." I'm like, let me go see what the fuck he doing. I go to his YouTube page, this guy got millions of views on songs. Millions. Then Drake's putting out videos where he's singing Lonely, which is one of Speaker Knockers' records. And then, you know, get that. I started being speaking. I started communicating, like just talking to him, giving him advice.
Because he was right.
He was right. Yeah. My whole thing with South Carolina was, y'all got to start utilizing the internet, and that's just not even a South Carolina thing. That's every fucking body.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Start utilizing the internet. I know y'all guys because of the internet. Y'all probably know me because of the internet. Like, the internet is what has flattened the earth. So I'm just like, y'all are not using the internet. Y'all still up at the radio station trying to get your records played, and that's just stupid. Like, you got a whole audience out here that you don't have to go through no middleman to get to. So he was doing that. So I was like, yo, this kid got it. Plus, people was fucking with his music. He was producing his own shit.
Yeah.
You know, going out of town, working with different artists.
And young,
like 19 at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then one day, I'm on Twitter after literally just talking to this dude 2 days prior. Mm. Literally. I remember he was leaving the radio station from meeting with B-Lord. And it's like, rest in peace, Speaker Knockers. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
He's just dead in his garage. So it's just like, he was the last person, at least from South Carolina, who really, really intrigued me on that level to say, yo, you know what, this, he'll make me fuck with music again.
Yeah.
But then you got guys now like Nick Grant, my man Jason Jeter and Amir are rocking with. You got this kid named Juhova. It's a few kids in South Carolina, but yeah, it's hard dealing with artists, man, because they blame you for every fucking thing.
Yeah.
And don't give you no appreciation for nothing. And plus, you can't hustle harder than somebody else. Like, you can't want it for somebody more than they want it for themselves.
Agreed.
Like, I remember with this one artist named Macadon. I salute to Macadon. I'm not trying to throw him under the bus or anything. Good dude. He had a song called Presidential. And it had a West Coast vibe to it. So at the time, I put Glasses Malone, who's my man.
Mm-hmm.
I put Glasses Malone on the record, and Crooked Eye, who's my man. I put both of them on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when I was working with Wendy. So I respect, salute to Crooked Eye and Glasses Malone, because they didn't have to do that for me at that time either. I was just Wendy's fucking sidekick, but they just had a love for me. And so I put them on that record, and I wanted to shoot a video for it in L.A. So I remember just telling Macadon, like, yo, get a plane ticket, come out, you know, we shoot the video. I remember him having his like manager call me and ask me how much is Macadon gonna get paid to be in the video, and it's just like shit like that is like, all right, why am I doing this again?
Wait, his own video?
His own video that I was gonna pay for.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That I already had got him Crooked Eye and Glasses Malone his features on. All he had to do was just come show up and shoot the video. But he had his manager call me and ask me how much would he be getting paid to be in the video. The thing I respect about Lil Rue is when I told Lil Rue he need to be in New York, Lil Rue ain't say, all right, you paying for my plane ticket?
Right.
Lil Rue got on that motherfucking plane. He's like, what? Swiss want to work with me? Yeah. I'm out.
Yeah.
That's hustle.
Yeah.
That's difference. People recognize an opportunity when it's not a paycheck involved.
And you're the guy who was working for Wendy for nothing.
For free.
For a couple years.
There you go.
Yeah.
You got to take those opportunities.
Well, a lot of artists don't have like foresight. Can you talk about how Brilliant Idiot started and what that meant in terms of like, you as a personality, as opposed to just being on the radio, which is like, you know, segments and all that.
Brilliant Idiots, really, like my man Chris Morrow. Mm-hmm. Chris Morrow.
Mm-hmm. Loudspeakers.
Loudspeakers. You know, he's an author too. He wrote like all Russell Simmons books. He wrote Rev Run and Tyrese's, whatever that book was called. I can't remember what it's called now. But
Baby Boy.
Baby Boy. But you know, that's actually the book that derived the TV show. But you know, he was always just telling me, like, here's two things he's been telling me to do: write a book and do a podcast. Write a book, do a podcast. I'm like, why would I do a podcast when I'm on the radio? But then that's short-sighted thinking, because I'm the type of person, I always want to be ahead of the curve when it comes to things, because I respect all forms of media. So Andrew Schultz, I actually wanted to do it originally with Jesse Mae Peluso, but you know, it's so funny, Jesse Mae Peluso's manager was kind of on some like,
how much is he gonna get paid?
Yeah. That type of shit. And I'm like, damn, Jess, I just wanted to do it. But then Andrew is a friend of mine, like a real friend. Like, me and Andrew met on the set of Guy Cole. Yep. Like, that's my friend. Like, Andrew was at my wedding. That's my real friend. So, you know, I was like, yo, let's do a podcast. Plus, Andrew's one of those interesting people who you either agree with him, disagree with him, or really just can't fucking stand him at all. You know, but it's always an interesting POV with him. So we would always have these interesting conversations about race and just life, just anything in general. Like, just sitting around right now, we'd probably get into a debate about something. So I'm like, yo, this would be good for the podcast. So we did it, and it just naturally grew on its own. Like, I didn't know what it was going to do. We did it, put it up on SoundCloud. 30,000, 40,000 listens. Yeah. Now we're averaging like 150,000 listens a week.
Crazy.
You know? And it's just a dope platform because it's unfiltered, it's uncensored, you know, it's no pause for commercial breaks. I mean, we do run ads, but it's not like a structure like The Breakfast Club. And I just think it's a dope way to keep the conversation going. That's what I always like to say. I like to say I either like to start dope conversations or keep existing conversations going. So it can be things that happen on The Breakfast Club that I may go elaborate on Brilliant Idiots. And it kind of just took a life of its own. Now we're doing all these live shows. You know, it's generating great revenue. It's just different.
Live shows in London. Cincinnati, and like,
yeah,
can you talk about your experience on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert?
Oh man, that was crazy for me. That was crazy for me because my manager, business partner Karen. I remember one day, me and Karen been doing business together for about maybe a year and some change now. But she's really, you know, come into my life, organized a lot of things, got a lot of things done for me. She got me my book deal. My book will be out next year.
Looking forward to that. Do you have a title yet?
Yeah, I can't announce it yet.
But in your head. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fighting with the book company for that. Right. I'm fighting with the book company for the title I want to use. But it's like, it's on Shimon & Schuster, but she got me my book deal, and she made things like Colbert happen, or the New York Magazine article.
Great look.
She made all of that happen. And you know, I remember her saying, we got to get you on Colbert. Like, it wasn't, like, I love people with that kind of vision. She was like, you need to be on Colbert.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't.
Well, what's the one thing that you wanted?
I never thought about it. Like, I'm be honest with you, I never thought about that. That's why I always say you can't turn people down when they call you and reach out to you. Because I remember Karen reaching out to me one day, and because that's actually G-Spin's cousin. And G-Spin was like, yo, I want you to talk to my cousin Karen. I remember her just talking to me and telling me, like, yo, you could be Ryan Seacrest. You could do what Steve Harvey's doing. Like, you have that much potential. And it's like, how is Karen, white girl from New Jersey, like, how does she know that? But she saw something in me that maybe I didn't even see in myself. Not saying I didn't have those visions, but she knew how to get there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it was just like certain things started happening, and, you know, the New York Magazine article, and then the Colbert. And Colbert was big for me because he's from South Carolina.
Right, right.
So it's like, he's one of those guys that when I would Google famous people from South Carolina, he'd pop up, which was great. Because prior to that, it was motherfuckers like Andy Dick.
Right. Or like Strom Thurmond.
Strom Thurmond, exactly. Yeah. See, that's the thing about life. In life, you have to have these pieces of evidence to build cases for optimism. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's like when I see a Stephen Colbert from South Carolina, I'm like, yo, I can do that too.
Wait, Andy Dick is from South Carolina?
Yes, so you wonder why I would have a pessimistic attitude about any of this shit.
Did you know that? I didn't know that, no.
Andy Dick is from fucking South Carolina.
And where? Like,
I don't even remember.
South of the border.
I don't remember. I just remember seeing that and being disgusted. Like, Andy fucking Dick. Nah. Vanna White, too.
Wait, you might have sold him drugs.
Maybe. Maybe I did. I don't know.
Vanna White.
Vanna White. Jesus. Stephen Colbert's brother was my fucking...
Right. Your middle school teacher.
Middle school teacher.
And you mentioned that to him.
Because his name was Mr. Colbert.
Right, right.
And they look alike now that I think about it. But I remember my cousin calling me the night before I'm supposed to do Colbert. And was like, you remember Mr. Colbert? And I'm like, yeah. He was like, you know that Steve's brother? I'm like, you're just saying that because they kind of look alike. It's Colbert and Colbert.
Right.
But you know,
and he's white.
And he's white. Yeah. But clearly Stephen just got a little fancy for TV. You know? Right. Something about South Carolina guys and French names. We like to take French names. Yeah, he's Colbert. I'm Charlemagne.
No, that was pretty great.
Yeah. Shit, we about to do, I think this is the sixth season of Guy Code coming this summer. Maybe the last, but it's Guy Code versus Girl Code. So you had like four seasons of Girl Code, six seasons of Guy Code. You've had spinoffs like Little Duval's Ain't That America. Andrew Schultz had Jobs That Don't Suck. I had Charlemagne and Friends and now Uncommon Sense. So it's like that show is kind of like a small brand in living color, I guess.
Yeah.
Because so many people went on to do other things and get other shows. Pete Davidson was on Guy Code. So, yeah, it was great. Like, you know, you do things because you never know. Like I always say, me and Duval turned down an MTV show, which turned out to be a huge MTV show. And when they came to us with the idea.
Was it Jersey Shore?
No, this is after the Jersey Shore era. But when they came to us with the idea, we was like, nah, that don't sound like us. That don't sound dope. That don't sound fun. And it ended up being like ridiculousness, whatever.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? So it's like, well, it was a show idea. It wasn't ridiculous, but it was a show idea like that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But I guess then they came to maybe Rob with the idea. Rob had the idea for his, and it worked for him.
Yeah.
But I always say, don't tell somebody no or what you won't do, because a lot of times people see things in you that you don't see in yourself. So it's a lot of times I'm not afraid to try new things or put myself in new arenas, go down new avenues, simply because somebody may see something in me that I don't see in myself.
We were asked to do MTV's Busted Ass TV show or something like that. It's like they went around and they would like give a dollar or something.
Broke Ass Game Show.
Yeah. We were supposed to do that. And
y'all would have did good on that.
We were just like, no. We were like, I don't like the name of this. I don't want to do any of this. Yeah.
I think they about to be on their third season, I think.
Well, listen, you know. Yeah. It's not our first mistake. It's not our last mistake.
It's not a mistake, though.
No, right, no.
What's for you is for you.
Agreed.
You know what I'm saying? What's for you is for you. And it will be other opportunities that you'll see and be like, boom.
Yeah.
That's us. There's nothing wrong with turning things down. And this is the one thing I love.
Says the guy who never turns things down.
I do now.
Yeah.
You know, only because I just don't have time. It's $168 a week and a lot of mine are full. But one thing I tell these millennials, now the best thing about millennials and the worst thing about millennials is the fact that there are no gates. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of these guys that are making so much money off YouTube. You come to them talking about some TV shit, they be looking at you like you got three heads. Like, what the fuck? TV.
Right.
For what?
Right.
Like, you want to take what I'm already doing online, water it down, filter it the fuck out, make it the weakest possible version of whatever it is.
Right.
For $2,000 an episode? Fuck you.
Right.
Like, I remember literally I was trying to talk to somebody about coming to do something at MTV, and she was like, no, MTV's corny. Like, that was her exact words. I mean, she didn't even want to have the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But she's doing so well on YouTube and online, I can't blame her. I can't be mad at her. So that's the best and worst thing about this era, is the fact that they have so much opportunity. So a lot of the opportunity that may be presented to them, they may just throw a middle finger to it because it's not to their liking.
Right.
But sometimes you got to think about the bigger picture. You got to think about where you want to be 10 years from now.
Right.
And sometimes things like television are that avenue. You can still do what you're doing on the internet. I treat it like 3 6 Mafia used to treat their fucking albums. They do their mainstream shit. Mm. When they wanted to put out their hardcore shit, like Crunchy Black or something.
Yeah. Oh, they hit up Lil White.
Lil White, independent, baby.
Yeah.
That's it.
Before we let you go, we do have a great friend of ours, Ashley, who has like this idea.
Right. That there are two types of people in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Trash or garbage.
Okay.
Question is, what are you?
Trash or garbage? I think I'm trash.
Yeah.
because garbage is just garbage.
Right?
Like, garbage is always garbage.
No, you're talking to two proud trash people. Brothers.
Because garbage is always garbage. But what they say, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
There you go.
So I may be trash to somebody, but to somebody else, I'm a treasure.
That's right. But that's the way garbage is just that's the way Karen garbage. Looks at it.
Yeah.
She sees the treasure in you.
She sees the treasure in me. But, you know, to somebody else, garbage is just garbage.
Yeah.
There's no coming. There's nothing else garbage can be but garbage.
Yo, listen, Charlamagne, you started off in what, Monk's Corner?
Monk's Corner, South Carolina, baby.
And got kicked out of high school and were out of high school, you know, in the streets and digging ditches in your own yard, like all of that times. To come into this industry and put a lock in your hand and punch it in the face is pretty damn good.
God is good, man.
Yo, thanks for coming through.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Appreciate y'all. Peace.
Thanks everyone for listening to this week's episode of Waste Time with It's the Real Jeff. If there's more episodes that people want to listen to, where can they find them?
You can go and listen to, I think we're on episode like 54 or something.
Nope. A lot of episodes. No, I think we're nearing 60 at this point.
I don't know. I haven't been keeping up. But if you go to soundcloud.com/awasteoftime, also you can go on iTunes. We are always available there. Search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. You can go on Snapchat.
Yes.
I said that like I had never said that before.
I know.
You can go on Snapchat. It's the Real or It's the Real Eric. We're fairly active there.
Jeff, tell people where they can watch this podcast.
Fullscreen.com/It's the Real. You can get that first month free. You can also watch Chappelle's Show, Napoleon Dynamite, and tons of other premium content.
That's right. Go sign up right now and enjoy A Waste of Time with It's the Real.
But you want to know what? We're not going to be able to grow this podcast unless you tell a friend.
Nah, for real, for real.
For real, for real.
Do you have a friend you would like to tell, Jeff?
I do. There is David something or other.
Is that his DJ name?
Yeah. He is Monkey Thumbs on on Snapchat, and he continually sends me videos of his dog shitting.
Really?
Yeah, so that's like his thing, I guess.
Monkey Thumbs?
I guess it's our thing. But if David Monkey Thumbs can tell a friend.
Tell his dog.
Tell his dog
to sign up at fullscreen.com/It's the Real.
You get the first one free.
That's right.
Eric, who would you like to tell?
Monkey Thumbs.
Monkey Thumbs.
I would like to tell our friend, Phil Chang, whose birthday it was this week. This is becoming like sort of a birthday celebration part of the podcast. It was Leah Palmieri's recently. It was Phil Chang's this week. Shout out to Phil Chang. Phil Chang knows so many people. Honestly, he might have more friends than anybody I know. Like, real friends, not Facebook friends.
Phil needs to tell every single one of his friends.
How awesome would that be? Hey, Phil Chang, let's stop the music right now.
Yeah.
Phil Chang.
Nah.
Tell all of your friends to listen and watch this podcast. Phil Chang, are you listening right now? Pull over to the side of the road. And text all of your friends at once. Turn the music back on. A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, should we do this again next week?
We have to.
So yeah.
Nah.
For real.
I like that.